Ladies and gentlemen, I would like to introduce a member of our Board of Governors at the National Investigations Committee, Mr. Joseph B. Hartcraft, head of the Aircraft and Owner Pilots Association. Probably many of you already know about it. It's a 100,000 member organization, embraces most of the pilots in the United States and many foreign countries. He was a lieutenant colonel in the Air Force in World War II. He's president of the International Council of AOPA units around the world and has served on many committees in Washington in connection with air safety and particularly in connection with private flying. He has been on our Board of Governors for 8 years. Mr. Hartcraft.
Thank you, Major Keogh, gentlemen of the press. I have no prepared presentation here today. I'd like to speak just a word about NICAP. I am not a technician. I can probably answer very few of your questions concerning current sightings. These should be properly addressed to Major Keogh and other members of the staff. I have this comment to make. I think there is nothing more devastating to a reporter than to be the victim of a hoax. And indeed, we have in this whole picture of unidentified flying objects a case history where ridicule has proven to be one of the most devastating of all weapons to subdue comment. I mention this initially because that part of the UFO picture which I have been familiar with comes largely from the reports of pilots throughout the United States and the subsequent events which have taken place when they have stepped forward with their findings. It is true, too, I think, that any subject which is an unsolved mystery is bound to attract many crackpots, many people who have as their sole purpose exploiting some popular thought for their own benefit. Probably 4 out of every 5 books that have been written on the subject of unidentified flying objects have been motivated not by real scientific research, but by some individual endeavor for personal aggrandizement or for commercial purpose. Now, my interest in this and in the NICAP organization came about through these experiences. I was speaking a moment about the government position, as I understand it, but there was a need, in our thought, for some group who had no commercial axe to grind to get together and look at these various sightings as carefully as possible. This has been done. At first, it was difficult to attract people of any prominence, but later, as NICAP showed that it was just as interested in exposing the charlatans as it was in giving serious study to those sightings which seemed to merit such attention, gradually a core of expertise was assembled, consisting of various scientists, astronomers, and so on, now numbering, I think, close to 200, is that not right, Don? Individuals whose own professional representation gave stature to the endeavor. When you run into situations in which techniques such as radar take these sightings out of the realm of sheer speculation, and when you have situations on what I call triple confirmation, an experienced pilot in the air who sees and reports a finding, a ground observer who sees and reports the same thing in the same place, and a man at the end of a radar tube who is reporting echoes on his radar scope, then it is time to think in terms of the expertise that is required and not to speculate. So many professional pilots have contacted us, men of great experience, airline pilots and military, who through the years have been through all of the gauntlet of the phenomena of the sky, the northern lights, the aurora borealis, St. Elmo's fire, and all of these things which can create quite weird and startling experiences, seasoned to all of this, who wear four stripes on their sleeves and who are professionals in every sense of the word, very anxious not to become involved in any exploitation, very anxious to maintain their professional status, and who still come forward and say, "Gentlemen, I had this experience which I think should be reported." Now, all pilots today, by law, in the civil air regulations, as you probably know, are required to report any observations that may come under the heading of unidentified flying objects. It seems strange in some way that the government position frequently appears to be to obtain this information and then either through government policy, and I'll not get into that part, I think that is up to the others, or through whatever motivates the government position to try and immediately ridicule the experiences of these people. I'm mindful of people like a prominent physician in Oregon who recently wrote to me. The substance of what he had to say was that he had a very substantial practice. He did not want his name drawn into a controversy. He did not want to lose his practice by being subjected to a ridicule. However, he had just gone through this experience with certain people in his airplane, and he thought that some government agency should be properly informed. And then he proceeded to describe what he saw. And the strange part, all of these people from various parts of the country sending in these kind of reports, who've never met each other, are reporting substantially the same kind of thing. So we have a mystery. So we have an organization which has set itself up in an effort to be entirely objective, to run out the charlatans and the exploiters, and to try to bring the residue of these sightings into some kind of a format which can be studied and evaluated. It's been a great pleasure for me to serve in a fairly inactive capacity with these gentlemen who have all professional abilities upon which they can make these substantial contributions. And I view this as keeping a communication line open so that we do not have a lot of news stories going around about people reporting little green men coming out of things out of sheer exploitation. And yet, on the other hand, being sure that the residue of these reports, which have some real substance, are not buried under some form of government policy which dictates secrecy or suppression. This is my interest. This is the reason I have identified myself with NICAP and why I'm very happy to be associated with Major Kehoe, whom I now introduce and who will take over the podium. Thank you very much, gentlemen.
Ladies and gentlemen, according to the United States Air Force, in following a policy which is set probably fairly high in the Pentagon, there are about 250 or 300 extremely incompetent airline and military pilots in this country. They're carrying passengers. They fly across the oceans. And they seem to be quite safe. The airlines let them continue to fly, even though they have reported UFOs. But in their UFO reports, or after they have made them, the Air Force has stated that they did not see what they thought they saw, and in effect, they are incompetent. The same thing applies to several hundred radar officers, radar men, traffic controllers, and others who are responsible for bringing you in safely, particularly in bad weather, to the terminals and major airports. It also applies to missile trackers, rocket trackers, and in general to competent, reliable citizens around the country. Now, if you add them all up, you will find there are at least 100,000 people in this country embracing almost every trade and profession, besides all the military and all the flying personnel, who simply cannot be trusted, their judgment cannot be trusted, at least in regard to what they see in the sky. Now, this is not an attack on the Air Force spokesman or the project spokesman. They are simply following orders to explain away all UFO sightings as quickly as possible when they become public and deny that UFOs really exist. Now, over a period of 9 years, we have gathered about 8,000 reports, of which at least 1,500 of them come from extremely competent witnesses. We have reports from pilots on every major airline, all the military forces, the tower operators I was mentioning, astronomers, scientists, engineers, a very good level of American citizens. Now, these have been evaluated. These sightings have been evaluated by our staff, by scientists, engineers in their various fields. And the majority conclusion is that these things are real and under intelligent control. Now, in that group which has reached that conclusion, there is another group, and it's a majority of that one, which believes that these things must be extraterrestrial because they are so far superior to anything we have. They base this on absolutely tracked speeds by radar, visual tracking, and combinations. Now, either all of these witnesses, every one of them, all of the thousands of witnesses here and abroad are absolutely wrong, honestly wrong, but they're wrong. They're unable to distinguish what they see in the sky, and I'm talking about pilots now. They cannot read radar scopes as well as they should. They can't track things with the sunny theodolites or modern tracking devices. They make mistakes. All of them are wrong. Not one single man is right, or else these things are real, and there is secrecy, and the facts are being withheld. Now, we have a report here that we prepared 2 years ago. It's about 200,000 words. It contains names, details, and dates of sightings by all the people, or many of the people I mentioned. You read that, I don't think you can come out of a complete reading of that without believing that, well, it's probable. You may not be completely convinced, but you will not be a complete skeptic, as incidentally I was when I started in on this years ago. Now, as a result of this policy to explain away, you will read about a sighting, and then almost instantly, or within 24 hours, you'll read something like swamp gas. Now, this case, this recent case up in Michigan, was investigated rather briefly by the Air Force, and the statement was released by Dr. J. Allen Hynek, who is the number one Air Force investigator. He said that what these witnesses saw was swamp gas. They all of them denied it because they said they were familiar with swamp gas. And since then, we have made a preliminary investigation into the characteristics of swamp gas. It's not completed, but so far, it doesn't seem possible that this could have been anything of the kind. It doesn't conform. There are also press reports that Dr. Hynek was pushed into making this statement public. He has since denied that he was pressured. However, there have been cases, from my personal knowledge, I know that people, spokesmen for the project, or on the Air Force press desk, and this was some time back, said that they had to answer these cases if they could, and sometimes it was embarrassing because they knew that the answers wouldn't stand up. And in many cases, they've had to retract them and go back to some other answer. Now, recently, in the famous Exeter case up in New Hampshire, and probably most of you are familiar with that, the Air Force did publish an answer and later retracted it. Now, for those of you who may not be familiar, this was a report by two veteran policemen of Exeter, New Hampshire, and a teenager, about 19 years old, who first saw this device and went to the police. They went out to the scene and skeptically, and when they got there, they found exactly what he had described, a very large object hovering close to the ground with lights flashing in sequence, creating such a blinding glare that it lit up the ground for about 300 feet. It even caused animals in nearby buildings which couldn't see this object to get upset, horses kicking their stalls and whinnying and so on. Now this was made, we made this report public, and it was picked up by John Fuller of Saturday Review of Literature and later published in Look. And somehow that had more effect than any group of sightings that we put out in the last 5 years, probably because of his prestige and the fact that he didn't have any axe to grind. He really went up there and taped interviews with all of the witnesses and came back and said there seems to be no doubt that this thing was there and it's real. The Air Force had first said that this was a mistake caused by low-flying aircraft. Later, they have put out this statement in an official letter, but not in a release, that because of NICAP publicity, our first report, it was picked up by newscasters and program directors and magazines and widely publicized. So they re-examined it. What they did, they went back to the police officers and queried them over again. And the police officers were very much incensed by being called incompetent. They stated, well, this was wrong. They were not low-flying aircraft. This was definitely an unidentified flying object. The same thing happened in another case that very same night, which is not so well known, down in Texas. On the night of September 3rd, two deputy sheriffs saw a strange object in the sky, and they parked their cruiser with the lights on near the side of the highway to watch it. It came down toward them, and when it was about 150 or 200 feet away, the light was so bright, and the object was so near they could feel heat from it. One of the sheriffs immediately started the car, and they went down the highway at 110 miles an hour. Now, this is from a signed report that they gave to the Air Force and also to us. Then, after a while, they thought, well, maybe we'd better go back and take another look. So they went back. The object was there. It came toward them again, and once more, they went down the highway at over 100 miles an hour. Now, these men they're not kids, and they're men who are old enough to have had a lot of experience in handling criminals and all sorts of law work. But they were frightened, they were actually terrified, and they didn't mind saying so. Now, repeatedly, there have been cases where these things have come close to observers on the ground. They've come close to automobiles. Several times they have come down in front and actually touched down on highways or else come very close to it. In several instances, causing drivers to run off the road or go into the ditch. All of these things added up show that there has been, within the last year, a noticeable increase in very close approaches and touch landings, not only here but abroad. Over in South Africa last year, in the fall, there was a touch landing in I have forgotten the name of the town, but at least it was down in South Africa. And two constables saw this. Their headlights fell on the object. They got a very good picture of it. As they got a little nearer, a blast of flame discharged from the bottom of this thing, and it rose very swiftly and disappeared. But where it had been, the blast of flame, or the weight of the object, or both, had broken through the pavement and scorched, very hot fire and scorched the area for some feet around. Now, this was an official report, and it was confirmed by one of the government officials in that area, and is still being investigated. I name these few cases, or I describe them, to show you that in contrast to all of the ridicule that you read about, I met a golden-haired spaceman and talked with him by sign language and then telepathy, and he took me up to Venus or Mars or the Moon, and we had a wonderful time and all that, and they told me they're here to save us from ourselves. Well, we constantly fight to expose all these crackpots and to get the serious evidence on record. Now, there is at present an increasing wave of sightings. Within the last 72 hours, new reports have come in, including one more from up near Ann Arbor, Michigan. Three witnesses in that case were included a research professor on a NASA space agency project, an electronics expert, and an electrical engineer. It described this object as about 30 feet in diameter, 6 feet thick at the center, and emitting a blinding red glow. Now, this is somewhat similar to the Exeter case. There have been cases since then in Colorado, Maryland, Florida, down in the Gulf of Mexico, where a Coast Guard crew is supposed to have seen an object. We're still checking that one. And it looks as though there's going to be another flare-up, which may extend all around the country, not only here, but abroad. Now, I repeat, all of these people are either deluded, ridiculed, they're self-deluded, some of them are frauds, or they're simply honestly mistaken. We think in NICAP, and our Board of Governors has voted unanimously on this subject, that it is time to end the secrecy, bring the material out in the open, and if we're wrong, that will end it. And if they're wrong, it's going to open up one of the greatest developments in centuries. I was talking with Representative Gerald Ford, the minority leader, after his statements to the press and on Face the Nation yesterday, and he said, "I see nothing but benefit from a full congressional investigation." He said, "If the Air Force is right, this will strengthen them and it will end all of this controversy. If they're wrong, they should be criticized, witnesses should be brought in, the whole thing should be openly investigated, because people are, at least some people, are getting a little bit concerned about this. In some cases, it's even worse than concern, it's actual fear. There have been a few cases where people have been so frightened they've actually fired at these objects when they appeared near their cars or hovered close to the ground. Now, in case any of you have not seen this, later on we will try to provide each of you with a copy of this called the UFO Evidence, which will show the names of pilots on all major airlines and many military officers, and also the conclusions of scientists and others who have examined this evidence. We are now recommending that the government set up an instrumented network around the country which can track these objects so that they can be passed from one tracking station to another across the country. Their speeds, their courses, and even the shapes can be identified, and within a very short time you'd have a mass of accurate data which you could release to the public and also to scientists, who could then go into the various aspects of this problem. One thing it would prove is that these machines or devices or whatever they are move at speeds far exceeding anything that we have that can move in our atmosphere. They've been tracked at up to 18,000 miles an hour at White Sands, moving in our atmosphere 50 miles above the ground. Now, an ordinary conventional machine moving at that speed, that height, would certainly burn up. Furthermore, no conventional machine could make such violent turns, climbs, and descents as these things have been tracked and doing. The press lately has been of great value and great help to those who believe these things are real and it's a serious problem, and has caused a general reversal among thousands, and I believe hundreds of thousands of people. We have collected editorials from newspapers all around the country and in magazines from the Christian Science Monitor on to Saturday Review and others stating that this seems to be a serious problem, it is real, and the government should be looking into it. As a result of this, we are even getting hidden reports. People have been sitting on citing reports for years for fear of being ridiculed, and now they are sending them in saying, well, it looks as though you don't have to be called a fool to say that you've seen one of these objects. Now, there are several aspects of UFO operations which can be handled by various members of our staff here. For instance, radar tracking, electromagnetic interference, and other aspects. Before I turn the meeting open to questions, I would like to emphasize one thing. There are about 50 members of Congress already on record who have told us that they believe this is not a joke. It is, many of them have said they would support hearings if it were brought up. If this thing suddenly does come to the point of hearing, you're going to see and you're going to hear some of the most amazing testimony from veteran pilots and people in the government, FBI agents, legislators, incidentally, newsmen, editors, and newscasters. Quite a number of them have reported seeing these things. Some of them come out in the open and some don't. And I think you will eventually find that there is substantial evidence that we are being observed by some type of device which is ahead of us, far ahead of us, and is probably controlled by a highly advanced superior civilization. Now, this is a conclusion which I personally have stated and is shared by some members of our Board of Governors and advisors, not all of them. But it has reached the point where many people in the Air Force have the same conclusion. In fact, the Air Force at one time had a top secret estimate that these things were interplanetary spaceships. This was confirmed to us by the head of the project at that time and also by the monitor of the Air Force project, who is now on our Board of Governors. So you will see that this, instead of being a subject for ridicule and a big joke, actually is a serious matter which could affect the lives of all of us. Dr. Charles Olivier, president of the American Meteor Society, without taking any stand, pardon me, on the extraterrestrial nature of these objects, has said that there is no question that the information has been withheld and witnesses are ridiculed. The problem should be brought out into the open, examined scientifically, and the public given the facts which have been hidden from them to this time. Pardon my voice, this is one of these sudden flu-type colds that came on me overnight. Now, I would like to open this meeting for questions, and I will try to answer some of them and turn others over to the people who are more qualified to answer them. Well, I was told back in 1952, at a time when they were preparing to release their most important cases, that at first, at the very first, they feared perhaps the Russians had gotten ahead of us with the aid of captured German scientists. They very shortly realized that was impossible because Russia had hardly started to rebuild its factories. So the only alternative was that everything was, all these reports were wrong, or else these things must be interplanetary. If so, such an admission might frighten people, so it was decided best to go under wraps. The project was set up, which was labeled secret, and openly, the reports were played down inside the project. They were considered very serious, and as I say, there was a majority conclusion that they were interplanetary. In 53, early in 53, the plan to tell the people what we had, not announce any conclusion, but tell them that we did have evidence of extraterrestrial operations. That was canceled because there was a sudden outbreak of sightings, and an intelligence colonel high up in the directorate said we would be in serious trouble announcing they were probably real without any idea of their purpose here. So there's been an off and on movement within the Air Force to some people in the Air Force believe that you should come out and tell everything you have. People should be told, since there's actually no evidence of any danger or hostility. And others say, don't tell anybody anything till we know more of the answers. Yes, sir.
Mr. Kehoe, you seem to be asking everyone to take an open mind, and yet you seem to be precluding any chance of the Air Force convincing you that these are not real. How do you...
We have studied...
We ought to, and the government ought to make it known to the public. You're not giving the Air Force a chance to say maybe they're not real.
Well, I think we have given them a chance. We have, I think, every Air Force statement going back to the opening of the project way back in 48. We've examined them, and I have talked with a lot of Air Force officers, some of them on the project and some not. And we've examined many cases which they explained, and then later explanation was found to be incorrect. And I, one of the officers on the project admitted to me that they were supposed to explain these if they could and reduce the, as a matter of fact, their own regulation says reduce these unknowns to the minimum. Of course, that's natural because you want to reduce them to the minimum in connection with national defense.
They say that they have reduced them to a minimum. That's what the Air Force tells us. Now, assuming that there was a congressional investigation, what, short of a finding that flying saucers are real, would satisfy you?
Not necessarily a finding. I just a release of all the cases and all the information. Now, you could go out to Wright-Patterson Air Force Base, as I think several newsmen here have done. I know Mr. Griffin has been out there at least four times. You do not get all the information. You get summaries of reports and some of them that they care to let you see. But if you turned out everything, including the opinions of the pilots and all the details, the cross triangulation, the radar confirmation, and so on, then you could make an accurate analysis. But at present, all the information is not available. I don't think over one-tenth of the information the Air Force has is available. You're Mr. Hines, aren't you? And it's a closed subject. The longer that it goes on, the harder it is to get this information. Now, Mr. Hall, my assistant director, has had many occasions where he's tried to obtain information, and there's either been a complete lack of it, or it's long delayed, or they say, well, that was explained. Would you mind explaining, telling about the Everglades case, how we've been trying to get an answer to that one, what happened there?
We have had, on some occasions, we have had to go work through the Moss Committee, because the Air Force has been so slow about providing even the most basic information. We asked them, what did they conclude on the particular case? They don't acknowledge the letter. You phone or write them, and they either have lost the letter or something of this nature. It takes them forever to find some simple fact in their file. Now, in the Everglades case that he mentioned, this was passed off. The Pentagon denied even having any knowledge that the case existed, and we had investigators down on the scene. This involved a low-flying cone-shaped object last March that a man suffered injuries in the presence of this thing. The mechanics of it are not known. No, not at all. This occurred in the Everglades. The man's name was James Flynn. He's a highly respected citizen of the community. We had very good character testimony on him. Now, our investigator ran across the Air Force investigators,
They were there questioning Mr. Flynn while he was still in the hospital. And yet, weeks later, when we asked in the Pentagon about the case, they denied even having any knowledge of it.
Kehoe, what do you suspect the Air Force has that you don't have in the way of information?
They may have more knowledge of the propulsion system that we have, and they may, it has been stated that they actually have some wreckage of one of these things in their hands. I've never been able to prove that, and I don't think it's so, but they do have a lot of detailed reports. Now, years ago, as I say, when I was seeing those, why, you could get a single sighting that might have four or five very closely typed pages or teletypes. Details, what the pilots thought and the co-pilot or the crew aboard, enough so you would evaluate. There's one over the Gulf of Mexico where every man on board a B-29 gave his opinion and the interrogating officer gave his reaction to what they said. There was a case over the Pacific where an object came awfully close and there were some explosions in the sky near the plane and frightened some of the crew and they said so. But you don't get that kind of report anymore.
I'm a bit confused. What are you asking? The Air Force to confirm your conclusions and what you already believe?
No. No. Merely that they that end the secrecy on sightings and stop ridiculing witnesses, at least the competent witnesses. An airline captain, you take Captain Killian of American Airlines about, well, several years ago. He, his co-pilot, flight engineer, and the crews of five other airlines in the general area saw three objects which were maneuvering in very strange fashion and appeared to be UFOs. The next morning they said that what he had seen was Orion through scattered clouds, that one of their crews had been out that night and had seen exactly the same thing. And Killian came back and said, well, that is very odd because we were flying at such and such an altitude and the clouds were below us. We were over the clouds and we had an absolutely clear sky above. So about 2 weeks later, they came out and found out that this was a refueling operation. Now, you know very well that out at NORAD, they can tell you instantly what's going on anywhere. Refueling operations on record, and you find out, if not in seconds, within minutes. It could have been identified. It wouldn't have taken 2 weeks to do it. And Captain Killian said, I'm quite familiar with refueling. It was not refueling. And the Air Force is simply trying to cover this up. Shortly after that, a spokesman told the New York Herald Tribune that, without mentioning Killian, that quite often some of these UFO witnesses were so drunk they didn't know what happened the next morning. Well, that didn't go down very well with Killian, even though they didn't aim it directly at him. And he started to make a big fuss about it. And Congressman Friedel here in Washington was about to invite him down for hearings. Bang, the lid went down. He was ordered to keep still, and he has never opened his mouth since then about that case to defend himself.
Major, this is a worldwide phenomenon, isn't it? And aren't there places where the investigative organs are not under the thumb of the U.S. Air Force, where you might be able to get some information? Say Canada, say Red China, I don't care.
Yes.
The Air Force doesn't control all outlets of information throughout the world, so what do these other people say?
Well, the Argentine government, through their Navy Ministry, has sent us official reports. They have said they're quite concerned over the problem, and they have sightings by their pilots, which have never been explained. The Brazilian Air Force at one time was doing the same thing, didn't send official reports to us, but they made open statements that they thought it was very serious and asked all nations to join in a nationwide investigation, pool their information. The English, the British for a while, had everything open, and all of a sudden the lid went down. They were very polite about it, but they won't release any sightings now. Yes, sir?
If these are extraterrestrial, why is it unbelievable that little green men would jump out of them?
Well, sir, I don't know why it is. It always deteriorates into little green men. course, we don't have any idea what beings from some other planet would look like. Some scientists say they would could be smaller, could be bigger, they could look entirely different, or by the law of averages, there might be some that would look like us. But that green man idea has been so firmly implanted that anytime people talk about space beings, they always turn out to be little green people. So, but the idea of beings emerging is not at all impossible. And I don't say it hasn't happened. All I know is that all of these silly reports that we've investigated have turned out either to be delusions or frauds. I mean, there are many of those. And just a moment. Don, you can remember some of those deluded cases, the cases where they've had some frauds in the silliest cases. You want to take a few of those? Take the Adamski case. That's the outstanding one.
Well, it's unfortunate that we have to spend time on these pathetic characters.
Oh, pardon me, Mr. Don Berliner. I'm very sorry. I was supposed to repeat the questions, too, and I forgot.
As far as reports of beings in UFOs, the great majority of these reports are in the hoax category. As the Major mentioned, the late George Adamski made quite a stir some years ago writing books about his fanciful trips to various planets in flying saucers and the golden-haired space beings that he had met. We investigated this man quite thoroughly because of all the stir that he created, and discovered that most of his claimed background was completely fraudulent. He claimed at one time to be an astronomer from Mount Palomar. Now, this is rather impressive on the face of it, but it turns out that he was located at Mount Palomar, and he had a telescope, but the telescope was parked right outside his hamburger stand. This is, unfortunately, the sort of thing we do run into. However, there is at least one case of a reported occupant of a UFO, which seems quite substantial. The Air Force agrees with us that the case is definitely not explainable as anything conventional. It occurred in April of 64 in Socorro, New Mexico, where a highly respected police officer who had had quite a bit of experience tracking meteors with the New Mexico Institute of Meteoritics reported seeing two small suited occupants near a UFO, which after it left imprints in the ground and scorch marks on the mesquite bushes and the earth. Dr. Hynek, the Air Force investigator, was on the scene, and our man was on the scene. And when Dr. Hynek left, he admitted openly that he was more puzzled than when he had arrived. So this is perhaps the only case where an occupant of one of these craft has been reported, which has really stood up under investigation. The rest of them, to the best of our knowledge, are quite worthless.
They were suited. You're not sure they were green.
We have no reason to believe they were green, however, Howard.
What kind of a tracking system do you propose, and by whom, and in terms of what kind of dollars and so forth?
Well, years ago, the Air Force set up what they call the grid camera system, which was supposed, these cameras were supposed to be distributed to various Air Force bases, and they would, the idea was to see whether they could break up the light, the glow from them, and analyze it. And the grids fell off of the cameras, and the thing was a complete flop. Al Chop, whom some of you may remember as the Air Force intelligence or information officer at the time, he said, please don't ask about that, it's too embarrassing. Turned out that they weren't any good at all, and they never picked up anything. But if the recommendations back in 53 of a group which did go into that had been followed, there would have been a nationwide tracking system. It was turned down because of lack of funds. But it could be done, and it could even be worked in probably, at least in part, Moonwatch teams and so on. If you got a UFO and you picked it up and you could instantly buzz another station in the state somewhere or other and say it's headed in your direction, they picked it up, you'd get a track and you'd get speed, and if you had height finder radar, you'd get that too. And you'd have enough data sooner or later that you'd have absolute speeds and you'd be able to determine shapes and so on.
Then to be composed of systems of cameras and radar interlocking and intercommunicating and so forth.
That's right.
Major, you've got the dark fence and spade an and spade ats and the Cambridge Astrophysical Network and God knows what else. Why would it be necessary to spend millions and millions of dollars more to set up a special purpose network to track UFOs when all you need, if your argument has any merit, is an executive order from the Pentagon telling people to use the equipment they already have?
Well, if they did that, that probably would be fine, but they deny emphatically that they've ever picked up anything of the kind, and although we've had individual reports that they have picked up objects from them. But if they could use it, then we wouldn't have to. But I'm assuming that this is going to take some agency outside of the military.
Yes, but is it also going to take some kind of exotic equipment?
Oh, no. No, I don't think so. It could be equipment that's already in existence. And I think we could utilize a great deal. If the military, the point of it is, it's pretty hard for the Air Force to divide, they say, to divide UFOs from national defense. There's always, they say there's always a problem that maybe a UFO might be a secret Russian craft of some kind or a probe.